and cultural community centers. We will connect with each city bureau to make sure that they have evacuation plans and employee communication plans in place. In the upcoming months, our planning process will work to strengthen our understanding of the systems and the relationships we have in place so that under duress they work. We will also be identifying gaps and action plans, incorporating lessons learned from TopOff, and bringing you back an updated plan after the exercise. All the information we collect through this process will be valuable for any type of disaster. The key to effective emergency management is understanding the systems that operate within the city and how they integrate within the region. The region has been waiting for our plan, and now, with your approval, we are ready to move it into a more in-depth planning process. Our first test of the evacuation plan will, of course, be through TopOff, and we'll, I'm sure, learn a lot. So, thank you.
Yes.
Are we going to, through TopOff, actually be evacuating the city?
No. Commissioner Adams,
it's just scenarios, right?
Correct. And actually, Chief Martinek is ready to address the implementation of this evacuation plan in the TopOff exercise.
Right. As any plan needs to be tested, this, as Patty pointed out, will be a good opportunity for us to do that in the top officials exercise in October. Whether we will evacuate the city, well, first of all, we won't do it for real, hopefully. We will talk about it. And part of what we hope to get out of top officials exercise is the discussion amongst the decision makers in the policy decision maker committee with the incident command structure to see how we will react and what part of the city that we would in the similar situation evacuate. That really is the part of the plan that we will be testing at that level. Most of the types of evacuations that we do now at a much lesser scale will be done the same way as always and probably within that exercise without giving away secrets of what that is. We'll do the same thing we always do on the street under a unified command. But the more important piece will be the commissioners and the mayor and working with bureau directors and then that communication to the incident commander of what the decision is on in terms of scope of evacuation.
Could I ask more questions?
Sure.
First off, this is great. Thank you for this. We've never had this, and so it's one of those things that probably won't get a single line of coverage in any media or newspaper, but if we
until it happens.
Exactly, but until it's needed. And so I really congratulate you, Mayor, for your leadership in this and your team. A couple of, just so that the public won't necessarily have the opportunity or interest in reading the report, the role that you see transit playing in an evacuation scenario, for instance, light rail having its own dedicated right-of-way, which can bypass freeway or secondary route evacuation efforts. What is your best thinking on the role that transit would play in a possible evacuation of the city?
Well, Commissioner Adams, we've had discussion with TriMet and Transportation Division, and what we've come to realize is that as me representing the police bureau, we have a tendency to want to commandeer, for lack of a better word, resources in order to facilitate evacuation. And what we realize is that TriMet is the best bureau in the city to accommodate that. And so really they know their routes, they know their flow rates, they know their ability, and we're working hand in hand with them to ensure that we move as many bodies as possible in the event of an evacuation scenario. We also work with ODOT and PDOT and other resources to let us know what routes may be available for evacuation. In the event of TopOff, we know there will be some level of evacuation. Roadways and rail will be impacted. We need to quickly determine what routes we have for evacuation. In front of you is an evacuation route map. It identifies key routes. What key decision makers will need to do is look and see what's the threat area and then identify those routes that are available that aren't impacted by the threat. And it'll be up to TriMet and other resources to say, given this scenario, this is how we can best move people in the city of Portland. So each person takes their expertise and applies it to the situation at hand, and that's part of the unified command.
So one of the possibilities is if there's an event in North Portland that you're going to have some agreements up front. Let's say if there's an event in North Portland that you'll have some agreements with TriMet that, let's say, sending buses that are not necessarily on their regular routes, but to an area to get people out so they don't have to jam up the roads with their cars. That's the kind of thinking that you'll be doing, or preparation you'll be doing in the months ahead with top-off?
Absolutely.
And that's the important part of the structure that I was explaining, that this annex provides is dependent on the readiness of bureaus, of different departments within those bureaus, and really of our citizens as well. I mean, another big component is for us to educate the citizens, continue the education that's been ongoing since 9/11, really, of people taking care of themselves, being prepared, communities and neighborhood associations working together so that they can be ready and do the things that they need to do, so that we, when we get there, there's less of an event on each of those individuals. And so it would be the same for the city bureaus. We want to integrate whatever their planning is, and that's why this annex fits into the overall comprehensive plan. We want to integrate what their planning is, use their expertise under the unified command, incident command structure, so that the real experts tell us how to adapt their expertise to the problem. So, yes.
Great. And last question is, given what we've done to date and your preparation, which is more than we've ever, I think, been prepared before, what's the message to individuals in the city that if something does happen, obviously it will be tailored to the unique circumstances, but if what's our message to the citizens that we now have established routes for evacuations, they should be aware of them and they should listen to authorities for how to actually do it? What's the message to Portlanders?
Adaptability and listening to the leaders. That's the message. We cannot say that we have established evacuation routes. We are not evacuating from the ocean or from having to go to higher ground. We will have to be adaptable to the incident. And so knowing your neighborhood, knowing how to tune into the radio to get the information about what routes are available or unimpaired and impeded is one thing that the citizenry and our employees should know. But we need to assess the situation. We need to then give that information that we, after the assessment, out to the public, and then be able to guide them to the their actions. And so adaptability and listening to the leaders is the most important thing that we can tell our citizens, besides being prepared for any kind of disaster.
Patty, you may want to talk about being prepared. What we want every citizen to have available is a 72-hour kit that provide necessary food, water, and other things, such as portable radios, so that they can listen if the electricity is off, that they can have a personal plan for their family as to how to contact each other. And we really want our public safety people to do this, so that one of the things that they learned from Katrina in New Orleans is that if public safety people aren't sure what happened to their family, they're going to do that. They're going to check on that first. And so we need a plan for our public safety people, but the average citizen needs to have a plan on how they're going to contact family members at work, at school, so that they can coordinate. Is there anything else that they would need to know?
I would say that every business in our fine city needs to help their employees have a family plan, because if the family is not taken care of, the employees will not be concentrating at work at the jobs that they need to do. And so everyone, every business, every person needs to understand how to contact or have an agreement with their children, with their workers, with their elders on what they would do in a disaster. Have a plan that you've talked about ahead of time. Don't rely that there will be phones available, but say, honey, if I can't make it home, you need to stay at school or you need to go to Susie's house, and have that known ahead of time. I joke about telepathy, but I think that if we plan ahead, we don't have to depend on any of our systems. We already know what needs to be done, and that's the key. Talk ahead of time. One of the main things about emergency planning is building those relationships and understanding what needs to be done in just in case. and that strengthens your system overall and gives you confidence in what you would need to do. So having a plan in place, not if, for employers and for citizens, is most important.
Have we had, sort of picking up on the use of transit for evacuation, have we had discussions with Amtrak or freight haul railroads about roles they could play in evacuation? I could see several areas where we could have significant events where freight haul railroads or Amtrak might be the most conducive exit.
Commissioner Saltzman, we've had discussions with airport. We've had discussions with rail. We've had discussions with Army Corps of Engineers who have the capacity to have a floating bridge on the river. We've discussed a variety of transportation capabilities depending on the nature of the threat that we face. Rail certainly has a capacity to move large numbers of people in a relatively short period of time. We haven't established firm partnership agreements with these people yet, but everyone that we have spoken to, and I think I can say that universally, has been more than willing to offer their resources in the event of a critical incident. So those will be ongoing, and we have had
conversations with Amtrak? I didn't hear you mention.
Yeah, in fact, I don't want to misspeak. We've had conversations about rail capacity and rail movements, and I can't say specifically that it was an Amtrak person that we spoke to.
This is hopefully in our next segment, that greater outreach to the partners and the possibilities.
Also, I was skimming it. I saw a lot of discussion about what to do about pets. I guess I didn't see anything about frail elderly or persons with disabilities that are unable to.
One of the things that we have learned, Multnomah County and their human resources or human, what is it called, services, and also our own Office of Neighborhood Involvement, have joined forces together to talk about what to do with the populations of greater needs, which includes non-English speaking, elderly, impaired, what services are available to those citizens, and setting up a messaging map that would allow information to go to those agencies that care for the frail and elderly, that care for the non-English speaking. So they're talking to people and getting messages from people that they already have an established relationship with, and they know where they are. And we're talking with 211 about messaging, being able to take phone bank. We're just beginning the conversations with key agencies that we want to establish a set agreement with, that this would kick in immediately in the case of a disaster, in case of any disaster, that we would be able to be partners and understand what their capability is in disasters. So we're working on that. We're gaining great knowledge and very pleased with what we're hearing and the relationships that we're establishing.
Also, Commissioner Saltzman, I did meet with the Citizen Transportation Coordinating Council, an organization that transports people with vulnerabilities, disabilities. And one of the discussions that we had was that there is a level of distrust for media, for government, and that it was important for us to work through those social service agencies that have direct contact with those vulnerable communities in order to get that message out, and that they have the network and connections to make that happen, which simplifies our requirements and certainly ensures that those people get the message they need.
Great. Thanks.
So the other part of that is, without trying to predict things that we don't know until it happens, is that we do know that most of the people who aren't in the special needs category or who aren't injured are going to self-evacuate anyway. And so one of our focuses will be how do we maintain control and assist in the evacuation that's happening anyway. And the other focus will be on that special needs clientele of whatever variety that they come from.
And one of the most vulnerable groups in New Orleans were low-income people that did not have access to automobiles. So they had to rely on public transportation or sheltering in place, and we all saw what happened at the Superdome in New Orleans. So those are the kind of issues that these folks spend a lot of time trying to work through and figure out who needs to know, what are the memorandums of understanding we need with other agencies, special groups that handle special populations. So, and I remind the council that in the mayor's absence or incapacity, the president of the council is would take their place. And so I think currently it's Commissioner Leonard until July 1st, and then I think it becomes Commissioner Adams July 1st, and I might add, during the top-off exercise.
Oh, my goodness.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Oh, my goodness.
On that point.
Well, you need to remain very healthy.
And very hair.
And very hair, exactly.
On that point, I was going to suggest that under the list of those responsible and responsibilities, it says the mayor or designee. I was going to suggest that you specifically include the president of the council, because I think up till now we've more been informal about the transition when the mayor's out of town or hopefully never happens, but incapacitated or there's a vacancy. And it's kind of a scramble when you learn you're here versus what I'd actually like to see more formalized is like on July 1st, Commissioner Adams has a briefing from Palm and the Police Bureau and kind of here's kind of what you'll have to do and have his own separate book. And at the end of that 6 months, Commissioner Saltzman will get it, have the same briefing, and so that we're all kind of thinking about, okay, now I have this extra responsibility for the 6 months that the mayor's out of town.
And that, you know, I really appreciate how you took a lot of action in terms of getting that together, including having access to a police radio.
Yeah.
And just give it to the president of the council so that they
Although have Sam can't have one.
Okay.
Hey, if you can be trusted, I can.
Mr. Mayor, if I may, along those lines, we have had some discussion about getting you all together at least once a month until a top-off comes around so that we can have some tabletop discussions. And maybe along in that context, we can talk about who's where and where are people going to be related to any disaster, but certainly to prepare for the upcoming top-off exercise.
One final point that I failed to think about earlier, and that is where there's the disaster, the big disaster, and then there's the potential for moderate disasters or low disasters every year during inclement weather. And so if you could put some effort into looking at how we deal with either the snow or ice happens during business hours and we got to get people back, or it happens during non-business hours and people are wondering, do I go to work? And work hours are now 24 hours a day. But I'd really like you to think about how this fits in or can move forward and continue to improve our efforts during inclement weather, because that is the most common evacuation type task that we collectively have.
Right.
Commissioner Adams, just to speak to that, I prepared some various threat scenarios that we've actually addressed in our local community. During 1996 floods, the floods were responsible for 8 deaths, $500 million in damage, and 30,000 people were displaced. So certainly weather is a major impact.
Yeah. Thank you, folks.
Great work. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did anybody sign up to testify on this?
No one signed up.
Is there anybody here who wishes to testify on this matter? Did you stand up to testify? Oh, okay. I thought you were standing up to, you wanted to speak to this issue. It's a resolution. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Thank you all. Thank you, Mayor Potter. Great leadership. Aye.
Leonard?
And planning is how you avoid a catastrophe when a tragedy strikes. And sometimes it's monotonous, but when tragedy strikes, it's when that training pays off. So I appreciate the focus of POEM on doing that and the upcoming top-off exercise. I think it's very, very important. Thank you. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, a number of us were in a meeting yesterday with Homeland Security folks talking about scenarios and preparing for the top-off exercise, and sort of the bane of people who work in emergency management is that, you know, it's really hard to keep people interested, keep people focused, except when there's a tragedy or sort of when you're on the tail of a major tragedy. And I really want to appreciate, and that's where we come in. I think it's up to all of us in this council and other elected bodies to provide steady attention to something that, you know, often we hope only happens, you know, on rare occasions, but when it does happen, our jobs are to really, as Patty Reuter said, to be leaders and to step up. And so that means we have to keep our eyes focused on these issues, as mundane as they may seem. And they seem mundane now, but when we need them, we'll be glad we spent this time on this. So I want to thank the mayor for this annex to the plan and keeping us keeping the focus that he has during his tenure. Aye.
Potter.
I really want to thank the staff at POEM, police, fire, water, all of the different bureaus that will have a significant role during an emergency or a disaster, I should say. But, you know, there is an issue about focus and paying attention. For instance, one of the issues we have are trying to keep our phone numbers of people to contact updated. And recently I saw a memo from POEM saying that about 20% of the people that we needed to have, 20% of the people we needed to have phone numbers for responded and the other 80% did not. So we really need the bureaus getting us the numbers that we will need to contact and ensure that we have people that we can reach on mobile phones when the disaster hits. And I say when because it's not if, but when. We know that Portland is sitting on a number of faults and that approximately every 300 years we have a significant earthquake up to 9.0. which is just about as high as you can possibly get. And so we do have to be prepared. And we also get floods. But if that earthquake hits, if it hit here, it would have a disastrous effect on structures. If it hits out on the ocean, the coastal areas would receive tsunamis of high tsunamis. So there's a number of things that I really appreciate POEM and police and fire and all the good folks working on, but those folks sitting at home have to understand they have a role in this too. And as we said earlier, by having a personal plan, knowing how to contact family, by having a 72-hour kit, and by the way, we do have 72-hour kits now in the Portland building and at City Hall so that we could exist for a while. But it's just an important area. And anybody that has been to New Orleans to see that 2 years later, half of the city is gone, literally. The people are gone. 80% of the city was underwater. And that a good portion of the homes are uninhabitable. So if something and when something hits in Portland, I want us to be ready. And I want us to take immediate action. A good portion of lives saved are often saved in the first few hours after a major event. And so we need to be ready, and I appreciate this evacuation plan as a good first step. And I look forward to the top-off exercise because it will show us where we are weak and bring home the fact that as much planning as we do, you can never be really prepared for a major disaster. So thanks, folks, and I appreciate your good work. Aye. Move to the regular agenda. Please read item 701.
Establish a work group to develop the Portland Development Commission's annual budget and to submit a requested budget to the council for approval in its capacity as the budget committee.
Bruce, could you come forward? Is there other staff here to testify on this matter? This is a resolution that was signed and submitted by all of the council in determining how the annual budget for PDC would be developed. So, Bruce, thank you for being here.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. For the record, Bruce Warner, the Executive Director of the Portland Development Commission. What you have before you is an ordinance which really does formalize and codify the process that our our board and the city council went through in terms of developing the budget for your consideration earlier this year. Also with me now, I see, is our chair, Mark Rosenbaum. We would probably want to make a few remarks. But what I would just say is it's a good ordinance. We thought the process from the staff's perspective, where essentially we had a work group that was chaired by a city councilor and a member of our development commission, was very beneficial. It allowed everybody to understand the issues, to dig into the budget, and I think we'll set the stage well for the new charter amendment changes and state law changes that allow the full council to actually adopt our budget as the budget committee is required under state law. So what I'd like to do maybe is turn it over to our chair, and if you have some further questions of me, I'd be glad to try to answer those.
Mr. Rosenbaum, welcome.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, City Commissioner. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning in full support of the resolution which you're bringing forward. I think the process that was undertaken with Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner Sten last year and PDC Commissioners Charles Wilhoit and myself worked very well. And if nothing else, I hope it exemplified a spirit of teamwork and camaraderie as it related to dealing with the city's agenda for development and focusing on a kind of cooperation as it relates to those expenditures. I thought particularly instructive in the process was not only going through the budget URA by URA and program by program, but also the long-term outlook that it allowed the participants to look at, kind of identify, well, this is this year's budget, but what's looming 3 and 4 years out that we as a city need to concentrate on? And I thought that was particularly helpful and is leading to more discussions ongoing now with that committee as we look at some of those more important longer-term or certainly larger expenditures. So I'm just here to add my endorsement and that, I think, of all PDC commissioners to this resolution.
Mr. Mayor, if I could just add the other thing that the benefit of this resolution is it does say that we need to have a member of the public there, the citizen member, and we also found that, I believe, very, very helpful. John Cruz was his questions and comments and insights were very instructive to us in developing the budget.
Questions from the commissioners? Well, thank you very much. We look forward to that relationship. Is anybody signed up to testify on this matter?
We have one person signed up, Bernie Bottomley.
Good morning. Bernie Bottomley, representing the Portland Business Alliance. I just want to echo the comments of Mr. Rosenbaum. Appreciate the effort that you've made, Mr. Mayor, in bringing this resolution forward. We think it represents a good balance of citizen input, PDC input, and City Council input into the PDC budget setting process. Recognizes the role of the City Council and the role of the PDC Commission in setting direction for the agency and maintains the kind of flexibility that we think PDC needs to have to maximize the benefit of its function. So we're fully in support of this resolution.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We have one more person.
Okay. Welcome, Commissioner Kadri.
Good morning, Mayor, City Councilors. My pleasure to be here. I am in full support of this resolution and echo what Chairman Rosenbaum talked about, his initiative on this year's process worked very well, and I commend you folks for recognizing that. At the same time, as you review this resolution and hopefully pass it, I also want to encourage you to elaborate on all of the good things that have been going on at PDC and the cooperation that PDC Commission, the folks at PDC, as well as with the City Council. We appreciate that, and we want to continue doing that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Carla, please call the vote.
Adams?
I'm really pleased to be voting in favor of this. Thank you for all the hard work from Commissioner Stinn and the mayor's office to Chair Rosenbaum and Bruce Warner and his team, mayor staff. Really appreciate the work. And the PDC commission. Aye.
Leonard?
We adopted the same kind of approach with all bureaus in the city 2 years ago of having a subcommittee get in and look at the details, and it it works well. And I think it worked very well this last year, and I appreciated that. And I look forward to us getting down and looking at the details of the budget each year. I think it's good for both sides to have a perspective a little different that's approaching some of these issues. And out of that comes good policy. And I think the public will be greatly pleased with the work that both sides are going to do in developing a very balanced budget. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, as a participant in the process this year, I think it worked really well. It helped, I believe, both members of the City Council, myself and Commissioner Stinn, to better understand many of the issues going on in the urban renewal areas, also to identify some of the larger strategic issues that need to be addressed by the PDC and the City Council in the coming years. And I thought it was, and having a citizen member was really a great addition as well. But it provided a more of an informal setting than sometimes the highly charged atmosphere of a City Council meeting or a PDC Commission meeting. But I think this does set the template for how we can continue to work together with PDC for the best interests of our citizens of this city. Aye.
Potter.
Well, I really appreciate the collaborative atmosphere that this creates by combining city commissioners with PDC commissioners, with a citizen. It really gives a perspective, a citywide perspective, as well as a citizen perspective. And I really appreciate that. I think with the changes in state law and the city charter, that this will help provide the right platform for coming up with the right budget and implementation of the policy set by the city. And this format worked exceedingly well this last year, and I see no reason for it not to work in a very similar fashion this coming year and into the future. So I appreciate PDC and the city's efforts in this. I vote aye. Thank you, folks. Please read items 702 and 703 together.
702, appoint Jill Sherman to the Portland Planning Commission for a term to expire January 13, 2010. 703, appoint Catherine Ciarlo to the Portland Planning Commission for a term to expire January 13, 2010.
I'm pleased to be presenting two highly qualified candidates for confirmation for appointment to the Planning Commission. Planning Commission is one of our most important volunteer commissions, providing thoughtful recommendations to the Council on the future growth and development of our city. They provide the highest level, comprehensive consideration of planning and development issues. In the next several years, the Planning Commission will be working with the Planning Bureau, the Council, and community on several high-priority projects, including advising on the implementation of Vision PDX and community priorities, the update of the comprehensive plan, the city's guiding policy document, and the Central Portland Plan, the first holistic look at the Central City in over 20 years. Catherine Ciarlo and Jill Sherman will bring diverse knowledge and experience to the commission. Catherine Ciarlo has training as an attorney, but has been in the field of nonprofit management for the last decade. She's currently the director of Oregon Women Lawyers, overseeing organizational management, strategic planning, and community relations for the organization. Jill Sherman has academic and professional experience in urban planning, a half dozen years of experience in all aspects of real estate development. She's currently a development manager for Girding Eland Development with experience advancing sustainable development that meets community goals. She served as a volunteer capacity with Central City Concern and the Urban Land Institute and has experience in developing affordable multifamily housing as well. Both women have a passion for Portland and its future, and I'm pleased to welcome them to the commission and service to the city after the confirmation by City Council. Are either of the candidates, I understand that Ms. Charlo is not here this morning.
Charlo is here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Please come forward, as well as Jill Sherman. Maybe it's Jill Sherman that's out of town. Well, thank you for considering this and appreciate you being willing to serve the time. And if there are questions that the council has of the candidate.
Well, I'm just real familiar with your work, and I think you're an outstanding addition
to
the commission. I think it's very cool that you're going to be there.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
I too have had an opportunity to work with the applicant, and she is outstanding. And thank you for your willingness to devote what will be a very large chunk of your life to creating a framework for the future Portland, the ever renewing and continuously changing Portland. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So I do have a question.
Yes.
As I said, I'm familiar with Ms. Charlo and her work, and I haven't had the pleasure of meeting Ms. Sherman yet, but I have reviewed her application, and she too seems to be an outstanding candidate.
Jill's here.
Oh.
Come on up.
Timing is everything in politics. Good job.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, sure.
So the question I have has nothing to do with Ms. Sherman's qualifications. She's eminently qualified to serve on the commission. She would be a fabulous addition. But it was brought to my attention by a member of the community that there's a statute that speaks to the composition of development commissions. And so I've had some exchanges with the Bureau of Planning about the concerns raised by a community member who I think we're also going to hear from as well. But basically, the issue comes down to that the statute says no more than two voting members of the commission may engage principally in the buying, selling, or developing of real estate for profit as individuals or be members of any partnership or offices or employees of any corporation that engages principally in the buying, selling, or developing of real estate for profit. No more than two members, this is the last sentence of the statute, no more than two members shall be engaged in the same kind of occupation, business, trade, or profession. Ms. Sherman does work for a developer. There's nobody that disputes that or questions that. And I think the issue isn't that. The issue is whether or not there are already two people that are developers on the commission. And there seems to be a reasonable disagreement as to whether or not that's the case. So that the current member of the Planning Commission, of which there is some disagreement as to whether or not he is a developer, is engaged, self-identifies himself as a developer, and he's an outstanding member too. So none of this is a question as to whether or not these folks are qualified or not, or are actually doing a great job. They are doing a great job. I'm very impressed with the Planning Commission. But the question becomes one of whether or not he is actually a developer according to the definition of the statute. I guess, you know, I've had exchanges with the Planning Bureau, and I guess I'm left yet with questions about whether or not the current commission already has the two folks in slots that are developers. And I guess I need to have, at this point, the city attorney weigh in to help me, or maybe Gil can come up and help me work through some of this, because I would actually look for an opportunity to be able to support Ms. Sherman's appointment, because I think she would be an outstanding addition. On the other hand, I think we have to be not just mindful of the letter of the law, but the spirit of the statute as well, and I'm concerned. So I guess it really brings us to the issue of Mr. Hansen, who is a current member of the commission, and the title of his company is Development Services Manager for OTAC, Inc. what was forwarded to me was, for instance, the Daily Journal of Commerce, when Mr. Hansen was appointed, led the, and I know we don't make decisions based on headlines, hopefully, but it did say veteran developer Hansen takes seat on planning commission. And he was quoted in the article as saying he is encouraged by the work his fellow developers have been doing when it comes to urban landfill. So I've read this very specific response that I appreciate from the Bureau of Planning about kind of the nuanced difference. These are my words, what I consider to be a nuanced difference technically in the spot that Mr. Hansen fills versus what we're, what I guess people, what you're arguing is commonly thought of as a developer. And to quote some of my attorney friends, it appears to be a distinction without a difference. So I'm having a hard time understanding how we don't already have two people on the commission.
Thank you, Commissioner Leonard, and I appreciate the question because we are doing the people's business here. We're very mindful. Excuse me, I'm Gil Kelly, Director of the Bureau of Planning, and we are the principal staff to the city's planning commission. We've been extremely mindful of these requirements of both state law and city code as we've been selecting members historically and in the current round of selection, and have, in fact, consulted with the city attorney on this, who supports our analysis in this. I should just remind the whole of the council that we look for the best people in all positions who have a broad interest as well as the professional skills that they may have in their professions as they come to the Planning Commission. And we look for those who are best able to weigh and balance and do the public good. And with that in mind, we have always steered clear of the specific preclusions of having more than two members in any given profession on the commission. And the state law actually singles out those who, and I'll reread the following. this is our city code restating the state statute and making one addition. No more than two members of the commission may be individuals or members of any partnership or officers or employees of any corporation that engages principally in the buying, selling, leasing, and we've added leasing in our statute where the state code is silent on that term, or developing of real estate for profit. And
you need to read the next sentence.
No more than two members shall be engaged in the same kind of occupation, business, trade, or profession is the other piece.
I mean, that's the part actually that I
that's of more concern to you.
That's, I think, the part that I think most people would read from a layman's point of view.
I see. Okay.
And conclude that where a person may not be directly involved in, if they are indirectly involved in a business.
Yes.
And I don't think there's, again, this is not at all questioning any of the folks on the planet. I've testified before them. That's the best group that possibly can be, and I understand that. And I would look forward to, even if this didn't work out, having you replace the next person who clearly is a developer on it. I think you'd be a great addition. But the website for this company owned by Mr. Does he own it or does he work for it? OTEC.
He's a principal there.
He's a principal. Yeah. This is a direct quote from the website. Quote, planning, permitting, annexation, public involvement, these core services provide the backbone of any development project.
Right.
Unquote.
Yeah.
And I get the distinction that Kerry drew for me, which I appreciate, of truly what one may think of as a developer. But this last sentence in the statute would seem to indicate to me that at best this is a gray area. And I am very uncomfortable, just personally, walking a gray area on a commission that carries so much importance and so much weight.
Right.
On how development occurs in Portland. I think we need to default to being extremely cautious versus being edgy on this particular area to make sure that we're not, at a minimum, violating the spirit of the statute. And that's my concern.
And the council is free to interpret this. We have interpreted in the past, and councils have in the past, not as narrowly as you might be suggesting. Because I'm glad you're relieving us of the first part, because that's the part we're more concerned about. On the second sentence, I would just remind you that we have architects on the commission and lawyers on the commission. In the past, have had engineers who also are involved in the development process. This firm, OTEC, that you cite, is not actually engaged in developing on their own. They're essentially consultants, principally to development entities. And that is the case with, and has been the case with attorneys we've had on the commission and others. It's a, as you might imagine, a broad activity in Portland. Well, and so that. There are many that are engaged in that.
I get that, but I guess it also brings to mind, you know, why one wouldn't look outside at all of that profession, like a neighborhood representative or...
Well, we certainly do, and we have, and Catherine is a great representative of that. But we also look for people that have some expertise in development issues. So, again, we have architects, land use attorneys, and...
I personally would appreciate not being in a position to not have to vote on this today and have maybe a month to have the city attorney look at this and make sure that it is a clear, bright line that exists and we're not even approaching crossing it, because I am, frankly, uncomfortable with the explanations up till now.
You know, I'm not uncomfortable. If we have architects, lawyers, planners on there and that provide services to developers, what's the difference?
Well, I think the difference is perception, and the perception is that the statute says, I'm struggling to find the sentence. The statute, and this is a direct quote from the statute, no more than two members shall be engaged in the same kind of occupation, business, trade, or profession. I suppose if I was doing the picking, I would make sure that there wasn't more than two people engaged in architectural work or any that was interactive with developers primarily. But certainly when you have what appears to be a business that, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with this, but again, it goes to the statute, where a business that actually says they provide the core services that are the backbone of any development project, it at minimum, you know, suggests that business primarily benefits from the work of development, if not directly, certainly indirectly by the work they do. And again, you know, maybe a very technical parsing of the words would justify having that person not be a developer. But I think the common interpretation of that and the intent, I believe, of the statute is to make sure you have people with separate interests on the development commission, and certainly. The Mr. Hansen's interests are to development. I mean, he primarily works for those that do development. And while he may not own the property involved or have a financial stake on a particular deal, he gets a portion of that money in the form of advice and consulting fees and whatever that involves. And I just think the intent here is to make sure you have different interests on the Planning Commission. And with all due respect, it appears that with this third appointment, you have three people with financial interests in development, not necessarily directly, but at least indirectly. And it makes me uncomfortable.
But ORS states very clearly in terms of how they define whether they're in the same kind of occupation, business, trade, or profession by stating no more than two voting members of the commission shall engage principally in the buying, selling, or developing of real estate for profit as individuals, or be members of any partnership or officers or of employees of any corporation that engages principally in the buying, selling, and developing of real estate for profit.
Okay. Well, this is truly a legal interpretation question. Can Harry give some feedback?
Well, Harry Arbach from City Attorney's Office. The state statute does not define its terms, and the city code does not provide a clear answer on the definition either of what it means to engage principally in the development business or to be engaged in the same business or occupation. The code does have a definition of develop, which is to construct or alter a structure or to make a physical change to the land, including excavation fills. But it doesn't define with any particularity who is engaged in that principally for business. What that means is, as Mr. Kelly has indicated, that the council has to interpret that or has the opportunity to interpret that provision and to apply it to given circumstances. Looking at it, I think it depends on where the what. Well, and in terms of the city council, the city code provision, the key question is what does the council intend for it to mean? So you all have to make a policy judgment of how essentially how close to the dirt does someone have to be before that person is engaged in, principally in the development of real property for profit. It might be advisable at some point once you have decided that question to put something in the code that defines it so that future councils won't have to go through the same exercise. But you are the decision makers on what it means.
And I would just urge that, I mean, I think rather than parsing, I would think you're proposing actually a very broad reading of that second sentence. And I would just caution the council in that direction because, for example, there may be two other existing members of the commission, one who's an architect and one who's attorney, who have both public and private sector clients, and again are outstanding members of the commission, who may fall within that broader definition. And by making that broad of a reach, I think you'd be severely limiting the number of people, applicants for the commission, that may have the skills and knowledge that we're looking for. We look for everyone to be a citizen, to be passionate about their neighborhood, to be passionate about Portland, but we also want a mix of skills and knowledge and talent. So
based on the commonly held perception of the planning staff, can you just go through who is represented on the commission right now, what interests?
And again, we're in addition to today's appointments, we'll be forwarding two more shortly. So we have a current vacancy of four commissioners out of nine. So we're anxious to get some appointments filled. And as I say, we interviewed probably two dozen, and we're continuing over the next couple of weeks to finish that out. And so we have a robust pool, but many of them are in professions that you might be concerned about under a larger definition. The current membership of five includes a sustainability coordinator for ZGF Architects. They could reasonably be included in the same definition that you've just made. Don Hansen, who we have talked about. Larry Hildebrand, who's a retired editor for The Oregonian. Michelle Rudd, who's an attorney with Stoll Reeves, who also would conceivably be caught by that broad brush definition. And then Paul Schlesinger, the current chair, who is an acknowledged property owner and developer. So he is the one on there who meets the strict definition, and that's the one that we've always gone by. And again, we're looking for two other appointments beyond the current two today.
What kind of, in terms of, if we were to approve these two nominations, what do you believe the next two, what kind of flavor of their background should the next two have?
I don't want to overly limit that, but we're looking to beef up the urban design, particularly talent on it, and additional neighborhood and geographic representation. I think those are the two pieces. The third category we've thought about, if you will, is a strong representative of arts and culture. And we've tried to find mix. Both these women were outstanding. You know, I mean, just blew us away in their interviews and are passionate about Portland, passionate in Jill's case about affordable housing and sustainability as well as just good development. And Catherine, who most of you know, also comes from a activist background in transportation planning as the former director of the BTA. We tend to look for multiple dimensions of our members rather than just pegging them to a slot. That being said, we do try to steer clear of these sort of base minimal requirements or proscriptions that are in the code.
I would appreciate hearing maybe some discussion about if we can get past this how you might undertake a process by which you defined some of these positions clearer.
Okay.
I mean, I'm asking you that now. Can you give me some kind of an idea of, if we can all acknowledge that this is at least a gray area, how you could be helpful in maybe the short term developing some clear definition of what a developer is, some clear definitions of what the various categories are beyond, because the statute, I think a common lay reading of the statute would lead one to believe that Mr. Hansen falls within that umbrella of no more than or under the umbrella of the same kind of occupation, business, trade, or profession. I hear what you're saying. Yeah. And I'm searching for a way to resolve this because I agree these are outstanding candidates. So, but I need to hear something about what you're going to do to avoid these kinds of definitional problems.
Yeah, I understand. I think it's kind of unfortunate that his firm chooses to sort of employ the term developer. I think that's a term of art within inside that profession. But let me just say that what we'd like to avoid, maybe it's one way to define that. We have had many and continue to have many members on the Planning Commission who are architects, planners, traffic engineers, lawyers, housing consultants, public process consultants, and some of those things are exactly what Don Hansen does at his firm.
That may be, but maybe it is just a matter of him being more cognizant of how he's self-identifying himself as a developer, and maybe you're right, that's contrary to the literal definition.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it doesn't feel comfortable for me to have these kinds of questions mm-hmm. brought to me and sure. not have clearer answers. I mean, I think in our appointments, we should be crystal clear about and avoid any possible misunderstandings about who represents whom on the Planning Commission.
Well, I think
I'm looking for some acknowledgement that we need to sit down and on future applications have clearer definitions of what those positions do or do not include.
I hear you. I just don't know what words I can put on the floor at this moment that would
satisfy.
I'm
not asking for this moment, but you'll engage in that.
Be happy to do that.
System to
be happy to do that. If at a minimum, we would want to be cautious about people who self-identify, I guess, as developer, even if that's not technically the way we view them. So.
Okay, Jill, Ms. Sherman,
yes.
I'm glad you're here. We've been talking about you.
I know.
We actually haven't been talking about you.
I know.
You
all right. We have not been talking about you. I guess it's an obvious question to ask. Coming from your most recent professional background, what is your view in terms of, you have many issues before you where there'll be competing interests between the needs and desires of a developer and a set of investors and the needs and desires of those people that might be impacted by a particular application for zone change or what have you. What sort of approach would you take to looking at the merits of that kind of a situation?
Is this?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Jill Sherman, obviously. You have been talking about me, but I didn't take it personally. And I think, and we talked about this a lot during the interview, how important it is to be able to view different sides of an issue, try to understand different perspectives, and have had prior experience working with diverse groups of people. And in addition to the development work that I do, I've done a number of different volunteer things, in the past, and also working with affordable housing, which is what I did prior to coming to Girding Eagland Development. I worked with a number of different constituencies, and I think that really any good development process, regardless, takes into account all of these multiple constituencies. I mean, you in fact cannot get something done unless you've worked with your neighborhood and have understood, other interests and so forth. But So that's one thing. But being on the Planning Commission is different, and the expectation is that you're going to look at any particular issue with as open mind as you can, try to understand the complexities. You know, any difficult issue is complex and not black and white, and do your best to kind of muddle through that and determine what you think is the right thing to do or the best thing overall, given the multiple perspectives.
So even though your current collegial relation, active relationships include a lot of folks in the development community, you won't be unduly swayed by those personal or professional relationships?
No. I think if I wasn't comfortable with that, I wouldn't have been comfortable